thing I've seen.
CJSF is listener-powered and listener-supported radio. It is awesome to have you joining us here on the radio. Your support means the world to us and keeps the radio awesomeness happening throughout the year. Make a donation to Fund Drive today at cjsf.ca/donate.
Welcome to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And, we're recording in Ottawa. And yes. It's snowing. Like, there is white stuff outside. I'm not a fan.
My snow's gone. This morning I woke up. I looked at the window. It was all shiny. I was like, I don't know what's going on. What have the neighbors done this time? And then I realized, oh yes, snow is a thing that exists. It looked to be like 2 to 5 centimeters and it's already all gone. But apparently in Montreal, cause as you know, my head office is in Montreal and I talk with people from my work in Montreal all the time. It's there and it's sticking. So it's Montreal. It's a city known for snow and ice. Snow and ice and steep hills and people sliding down those steep hills and all those famous videos of buses just fishtailing, spiraling down the hill. This was a topic of conversation, both at work and with my family. Everyone talking about good winter footwear. And a conclusion that I came to years ago, you may have noticed this, or you may not have noticed this, but your brain did. I don't have winter boots. I wear non-slip janitor boots and just wear thick socks. Oh. Have you noticed my winter footwear?
I can't say I've drawn attention to your winter footwear.
Ice everywhere. It's a death trap. I would rather have the non-slip boots and be a little bit chilly, honestly.
I know that in Ottawa and a lot of this has amazed me that Uggs had any sales in Canada, but it's the salt. There is so much salt.
Yeah.
You can't have nice things. You know, we've talked about it before about Canadian fashion sense in the winter. Just it stops
from the waist down. Just ignore it. Like people put out really good money on nice coats, nice scarves, nice hats, nice sweaters, nice whatever, but then from the waist down, like what are your oldest, rattiest pair of jeans? Wear those and then just wear long underwear underneath and just accept the fact that the bottom 2 to 6 inches of your jeans are just going to be solid with salt.
You know, I'm almost tempted to wear like Wellingtons, just something waterproof, and just go for it. Anyway, that was how we're starting off. We're talking about the weather, but it is not all sunshine and rainbows.
It is Canada complaining about the weather as our national sport.
It is. It is true.
Some people think it's hockey. Officially, it's complaining lacrosse, about weather, but really, it's complaining about the weather. Yeah.
No, I believe entirely that that is the case. Speaking of ups and downs, a couple of weeks ago, we reported on guidance issued by the National Hockey League vis-a-vis displays of social support, I think is what it boiled down to. This is everything from wearing a camo jersey in support of the veterans, pink tape on your hockey stick to raise awareness for breast cancer, and pride jerseys and rainbow tape for the LGBT community. I think we actually referenced the Halifax Clams. Okay. It was the Halifax Clams. Canadian League team who wanted to, you know, express their frustration with this arbitrary decision by the NHL to remove any and all displays of social support. Well, it may surprise you to learn that that went about as exactly as well. My grammar here was horrible. It went about as well as you would imagine it would. Mm-hmm. Some of the highest profile hockey players were like, nah, I'm still going out with my rainbow stick, and just did so anyway. Mm-hmm. There were multiple teams who expressed concern, strongly worded disagreement mm-hmm. With the NHL. And the big story this week is that after about 14 days, give or take, mm-hmm. The NHL has now changed its mind mm-hmm. on their arbitrary ban. Now, in all fairness, I think they went too far one way. Mm. They've rolled it back, and I think they've actually landed in a reasonable middle.
And what's that?
And, you know, do we need pride stickers, pink ribbons, camel shirts during a big game? No, we don't. But
that's one of the things that a lot of people, even people who wanted to allow some of this stuff, said, like, if you're going to say nothing but team uniforms during official games, mm-hmm. that's fair. Even people who are politically active were like, you know what? It's a uniform. Uniforms are there to be uniform. Like, it's in the name, literally. It's fine. But if you're talking about practice, definitely if you're talking about social media presence. And actually, this is one thing that I'm glad they never touched on. When you're off the rink, if you have an Instagram account, if you use Twitter, if you, or whatever it's called now, if you have a social media presence where you talk about that kind of thing, that is fine. We are talking about when you're on the ice or when you're on the field, if you're talking about another sport. And I actually kind of respect the fact that they never asked people to stay silent outside the league. I think part of this is driven in part by college football in the U.S. being drowned with people being politically active during games. And teams that have people who are politically active during games saw damage to their ticket sales. And teams that had people who kept it off the field, even if they were politically active, saw no damage to their ticket sales. So I think that may have been a motivator, but you're right. I think there's such a thing as overshooting. I think there's such a thing as saying, like, you know, we have to do this in a way that respects the fans, that respects the game, that respects the uniform, that respects whatever, list it, without coming down too hard and saying what people can and cannot do in their personal time. And the practice sessions, I think that's kind of fair play, because like, they're not really recorded, or even if they are, it's not really a big deal. Like, you really have to dig on, I don't know, ESPN or whatever in order to find those matches. So just leave them.
We're clearly up with the sports. But, you know, it does seem that games are now open to it. But I, mm-hmm. you know, it really started off with the Pride games. Now, mm-hmm. the concept here is very simple. A lot of folks know hockey. Everyone, a lot of people know, play hockey. And I'm sure you can think of five people right now who play or played hockey. And the idea is that it's quite concerning that of all of these thousands and thousands and thousands of hockey players at all kinds of levels, almost none of them are gay openly. Mm-hmm. So there is something happening where it's just the math isn't mathing. Like, why is it that it's so unbelievably rarefied to find gay players? So creating a space that's just a hair more welcoming was sort of the goal here. The there's a name of a campaign. Let me find the right name for it. The You Can Play project, which is really behind that rainbow tape. Idea being saying, look, anyone can play hockey. Whether how well you play hockey is, you know, it's a separate conversation. But everyone can play hockey. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you can slide around. You know, you could get me on an ice rink and call it hockey. Mm-hmm. I call it the latest edition for America's Home Funniest Videos. But that mm-hmm. being said, the idea was just to get more people, create a safe spaces. And there were six players over the course of the summer, I'm not sure if you recall this, that refused to wear the Pride jerseys during the Pride games. Mm-hmm. And they were effectively benched.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I think benching them in that scenario makes sense. Like the part of the purpose of that game is to be like, look, anyone can play, but if you refuse to, then whatever, sit this one out. You know, it's not going to be the end of the world. If it was an actual game, you know, then maybe.
Okay, so one of the things that led to all this was there was one player who was Russian, and I'd hate to surprise you, but there's a lot of Russians playing hockey in Canada. And I wish I could remember the name, but he basically said, I am ultimately kind of indifferent about gay rights. Not in a I don't care kind of a way, but like, sure, sounds great. You know, he's not going to march for us. He's not going to march against us. It's just not on his radar, which is fine. You know, I'm okay with that. So long as you're not trying to take away rights or oppress people, if you're just sort of like, yeah, whatever, like that's fine. But one of his issues was that he was worried that if he was spotted, even tacitly, accidentally endorsing LGBT rights, that could affect his life back in Russia, or could affect his family's life back in Russia. And he basically said, like, this should be optional. It's okay if you ask us, so long as we have the right to say there are reasons why I don't feel comfortable saying yes. And then
I
not
get
punishing.
That. But yeah. It's a Pride game. Okay. The option there is to not participate. You know what
True.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like it would be as odd to be the only one not in a rainbow jersey. You know what I mean? Like, that's... Anyway, so the NHL went way in one direction, said no non-uniform things whatsoever. Nothing at all. That went down like a lead balloon.
Yeah.
They have now backtracked. And they're like, you know what? Okay, fine.
But I also think saying you must endorse this political movement, I also think that's too much in the opposite direction. Because here's the thing, actually. There are people who are gay or lesbian or bisexual or trans who reject LGBTQ politics. Like, it doesn't make you homophobic to not want to wear the rainbow. There are people who don't approve of it, and you can disagree with them.
It is a little garish. Like, let's be honest.
But what, the rainbow?
Yeah. All those competing colors. Like, it's, you know what I mean?
It depends on the palette they used. I've never seen a pastel rainbow flag, except for like sun faded ones. But anyway, but there are people who, you know, they endorse the community, but they don't like the politics, or they don't like the activists, or they don't like whatever. So, I mean, like, rejecting the symbol doesn't necessarily make you homophobic. There are plenty of people out there who are like, actually, all those studies that we've covered over the past 3 years or whatever for some reason, it keeps coming back to Wales as being the weird, interesting one where everyone's like, yeah, gays are fine, I don't care. But then they don't like the politics. There was that English study that we read a while ago that basically said that
you mentioned that
people accept the idea of having a gay coworker or a gay neighbor, but when you talk to them about gay politics, they're just not interested, which is, this is a thing that can happen in sports as well, because fundamentally they are there to put a black thing made out of whatever weird rubber on some ice and hit it with a stick, or put the ball in the hoop, or cross the line, or do whatever it is that you're supposed to do. Put the ball in the hole. I don't know. What sport are we talking about? Like, some people are just like, I am just here to hit a ball with a stick while sitting on a horse, and that's what they care about, you know, and or knock people over. That's what I'm here to do. I don't care about, and it's kind of fair, or even if they do care, they don't want to do that when they're in the ring or on the field, you know. And that's also fine, because there are plenty of people out there who are politically active, but they keep their lives separate. You know, and you do politics when you're doing politics, you do sports when you're doing sports, you do singing when you're doing singing, no mixing, and people have the right to do that.
I agree. I do think that when you circle back to that core purpose, like, why are we talking about rainbow tape?
Yeah,
it's because the math isn't mathing. Like,
yeah.
there like, how on earth are there this many professional hockey players? Mm-hmm. And statistically, some of them must be gay. But for some reason, they absolutely not. And one of the theories is that maybe it's not the most welcoming environment. Mm-hmm. Hence the everyone can play project, you know, that hence the mm-hmm. efforts to make a welcoming environment. If mm-hmm. that is just a bit of rainbow colored tape on a stick that's going to get used one time, that's fine. If it's pride games where people who don't feel comfortable for whatever reason, you just don't participate in that game, also fine. You know, I think that there is common sense middle ground here that we can walk without, you know, causing a ruckus. Mm-hmm. Speaking of disproportionately queer positions, we've talked before about jobs that are surprisingly gay.
Yeah.
And I think actually a technical writer was way up there. Yes. And also the media industry was also pretty gay. Media and entertainment. So yeah, we are in the right field.
Oh yes.
However, you identified a couple of new reports. In particular, it was a report by the Social Research and Demonstration Corporation, the SRDC, which is a nonprofit research organization to look mm-hmm. at new educational programs. Tell us a little bit about that report that they just released.
Basically, what they found was that there was a very, very disproportionately low rate of people identifying as LGBT in the trades. Now, they focused on construction because construction is sort of, it's kind of a crossroads from the trades. Like, you know, plumbers will do construction, electricians will do construction. I don't know, roofers and framers and people who know stuff about concrete and asphalt, like most of the professions, not all of them, but most of them will cross roads in construction at some point or another. You don't see a lot of automotive repair in construction. But in general, the trades do crossroads there. And they just found that there was a very low rate, and they were wondering why that is. It's a pretty good field in terms of you do need a fair deal of training and supervision, but in terms of formal education, you can sort of skip formal education, get a pretty decent living with a pretty decent income. And it is actually sort of the entry point for a lot of struggling minority and impoverished communities to accumulate enough wealth to get, you know, their children off to university or starting a small business or something. It is that nice entry point. So they were just sort of curious about that. And they actually found that it was very disproportionately low. So there's a few things that are kind of interesting.
Just to give an idea of how low, because disproportionately low sounds bad.
Let me just
tell you this particular detail.
Okay.
They looked at a survey sample of 45,899 people in trades.
Yeah.
93% of them were straight men.
Okay, yeah.
And just 0.3% were straight women. And then 0.5% was gay, 0.6% were lesbian. Like, it was like, it's not just disproportionately low, you know, with the what's the gender balance in Canada? It's like 51-49 or something.
Mm-hmm.
This is 93% straight man. Like, I don't know if disproportionately low emphasized that point enough. Anyway, carry on there, Seb. I just thought I'd have to clarify that.
They did really good math here too. Like, looking at some of the notes and the margins, they did all the stuff that I don't normally see in surveys like this that are really nice. They did what's called a chi-square test, which is just like a variation from expected distribution. So let's say I'm going to make up numbers. These are not the real numbers. I'm going to use numbers that are easy to use. Let's say 10% of all Canadians are LGBT, and let's say 10% of all Canadians are in education. That's a bit high, but anyway. You would expect that 10% of educators are gay, and you would expect that 10% of gay people are educators. And then you multiply mm-hmm. them together, and 1% of all Canadians would be gay and educators. That would be the expected level, assuming even distribution. Now, let's say 4% of all Canadians are gay and educators. That means that there's a disproportionate number of gay people in education. And then you could do all this sort of secondary math to see what the effects are and power and all that kind of thing. And when they looked at this, so they were saying, like, for example, let me look at this table. 7.6% of people in the trades are Indigenous or Inuit and are sexual minority men. Okay. Is that high? Also... Is that low? And what they actually found is by comparing it, by multiplying how many people are Indigenous or Inuit times how many people are sexual minority men, that's actually really high. It's unexpectedly high.
I was also surprised at the difference between in terms of race and in general. Yeah. Like, they found that 81% of the straight men were white. Mm-hmm. So out of that 93% being straight one, 8 out of 10 of them are white, so 2 out of 10 are not white. Compare that to the not straight men in construction. Mm-hmm. You know, 10% more of them were racially diverse. Mm-hmm. It seems to be, if you're not a straight man in construction, you're just a smidge more likely to also not be white. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair conclusion?
You're also more likely to be bilingual.
And nearly all, let's be honest here, one of the big things that they found was just shy of 60% of folks in trades had higher education, post-secondary education. Like, these are smart folks. There is no difference between the folks going into, in terms of gender balance and education, between folks going into mm-hmm. trades and folks going elsewhere in terms of sex and between sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. So it is a really interesting question. Now, as you know, mm-hmm. my partner, I do speak to him a lot, but I don't speak about him too much.
Speak to him, he would let you know.
Yes, with enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. But no, he's in the trades. He's in the trades. And what astonishes me is, you know, he said something recently, and I think it captures the hidden narrative in this report. You know, why is it so disproportionately low? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he makes all of the gay jokes before other people do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about, if you take up all that space, if you become the comedian, you're not the joke. Mm. And it is sad. It is something we see in lots of different spaces. Mm-hmm. But that was quite, you know, that was a bit of an eye opener in terms of, you know, having to do that to be the butt of your joke before you're mm-hmm. the butt of someone else's joke. You know, I wonder if that's part of it, that sort of cultural context.
Well, they looked into it, and they actually did find there's a few issues about why the trades are not very attractive. So some of it has to do with stereotypes. Some of it actually is LGBT folks are more likely to be university educated, college educated. They're more likely to get white collar work. They're more likely to get office work. That's for sort of other separate reasons. But one of the issues is they actually did find is that there's this stereotype that the trades are sort of homophobic, racist, violent environments. I used to work on a construction site, and what I can tell you is that there were individuals who were not great, I guess you could say. They were unsavory characters. And really, they were just mean. They weren't necessarily homophobic. They just knew that these were mean words, and they would just throw around mean words. And that was it. And some of these people were just not very sociable, let's say. And I don't think they would be able to find work elsewhere. I did find I met a lot of people who are in the trades for other reasons. They liked it. You know, you can get up at 6 a.m., do 7 hours of work, get a really good paycheck, be out of work by 2 p.m, go home. It's all good. You know, you don't have to stress when you're off the job. You're off the job. No one's going to call you up and say, come back to work or finish a portfolio over the weekend or anything like that. Like, there's reasons to do it. Like, it's not just, I don't know, there's this reputation that it has for being for mean, bigoted dum-dums. And that's totally unfair, especially when you get into some of the more technical side of the trades. Like, you have to be smart to be an electrician or a plumber. You need a very specific kind of intelligence, and you need to be on your feet. A lot of them can do amazing math in their heads. But some of it is this stereotype, and some of it is actually on-the-job experience. Now, some of that is just razzing, if you're familiar with the term, just people teasing each other. And it's not actual homophobia. They're just using the words because, again, they're just testing each other out. You spend all day with each other. You're joshing about. Some of it is real. And maybe even if you are in an environment where you don't mind people teasing coworkers and friends, you don't want them to do that. That is a bridge too far. That's fair. But there are some of these assumptions. A lot of another one is health outcomes. I think we've mentioned this before, but this is other studies that are unrelated to this that I just remember. LGBT folks are more likely to have autoimmune conditions and long-term chronic health problems. So many of them are very poorly suited for the trades. Why that is, unknown. It's this really weird and interesting, complicated thing. And at the same time, a 2021 census in England and Wales, the census, usually the data gets released a couple of years actually after they do the census, moderately related. And they actually also found that the number of LGBT folks in the trades was incredibly low. And then when they actually looked at it, and I don't want to shock you with the results of what the top ones were. And this is they focused on LGB, not trans is a different issue that they were sort of looking at separately. The census in England is catching up to some of these issues. But the largest group, 13.7%, were air travel assistants. And then 12.3% is actors, entertainers, and presenters, and 11% at leisure or theme park attendants, 10% at coffee shop workers, 9% at artists. Like, it's basically what you would think.
It does beg the question, do the trades need to be gayer? Put another way, do we need more diversity in a field that is 93% male, straight male? Do we need that diversity as a home builder or as an employer?
Yeah.
Is that necessary? I mean, maybe. I think when you're looking for the most qualified candidate, race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, I think that's almost irrelevant. You're looking at competency, you're looking at skill. And one of the recommendations that this report put out is about addressing barriers to entry in order to shift the trades culture. So they're really talking about that idea of who fits, in air quote, into the trades and sort of, really working with hiring, the people who do the hiring, to look to address that. I don't know. Do the trades need to be gayer? Maybe, maybe not. Does there need to be a slow shift in culture? Maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. Probably leaning more on the maybe side than not there. But I think another recommendation they have here, which I think speaks truly volumes, is promoting strong leaders and managers who are committed to advancing 2S LGBTQ plus equity and inclusion. It's one thing to go from 93% straight male to recruiting a couple of gays, the odd lesbian in the warehouse, and then calling it a day. Look, now we're 90% straight male, and we've diversified.
Removing barrier to entry versus tokenism. I think I am always on behalf of removing barrier to entry. Like, if we were to find out that in the city of Ottawa there were zero gay firefighters, okay? We know there are some because you and I.
I was about to say, we both know that's not true.
yeah, we both know that's not true. But let's say there were zero firefighters. I would not be bothered by that if I found out that when they looked into it, it turned out that they're not homophobic or anything. It's just that no one's applied, And if somebody did apply and they qualified for the job, they would get hired. Like, I'm not going to force them to say, you don't have equal representation, you must hire more people. There's something cheap about that. But if the real issue is just barrier to entry, absolutely deal with barriers to entry. We're in a cost of living crisis. Like, if somebody wants a job and they're qualified, give them the dang job. I'm all for it, but it For me, it's all about the front end.
I think what this other recommendation is about the great, now you're working here, tolerate this toxic environment or leave. You know, we need to, you can't just get people in and be like, whoop, job done. You know, it reminds me of workplaces when they first started to get women into workplaces. It's like, what, you want another washroom? What's that about? You know, like, why can't you just use this one? And, you know, and just the tone and culture